the update from One Bills Drive. Nothing going on here. Very quiet at One Bills Drive. The rest of the league busy hiring coaches. Adam Gase expected to be hired as the next head coach of the New York Jets, the former Dolphins coach. And former Cleveland Browns interim head coach Greg Williams under consideration to be the Jets' defensive coordinator. The Jets reached out to Gase after he was fired by the Dolphins back on New Year's Eve. He was only 23 wins, 25 losses in three seasons, but he did well against the Jets, winning 5 of 6 times. Adam Gase, the next head coach of the New York Jets. That announcement expected to be made official later today. Mike McCarthy says his options this year were New York or nothing. The former Packers coach says he plans on coaching in the NFL again, just not this season. McCarthy's 55 years old. He will sit out 2019. He pursued only one job, the Jets head coaching position, but now that it's going to Adam Gase, McCarthy says he is out. He'll stay home and be with his family in 2019. The baseball's Oakland A's expect Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray to declare now for the 2019 NFL draft before Monday's deadline. That's according to the San Francisco Chronicle. Murray, chosen by the A's with the 9th pick of the Major League Baseball draft, signed a deal in June with the A's. He led Oklahoma to a 12-2 record and a spot in the college football playoffs, won the Heisman Trophy, and now he's expected to declare that he's eligible for the NFL draft. Draft experts say Murray could be a first-round pick. ESPN's Chris Mortensen said Murray was getting first-round feedback surrounding the NFL. Los Angeles Chargers have signed a kickoff specialist, Nick Rose, to handle kickoff duties in Sunday's wild-card playoff game against the New England Patriots. Their kicking game, the Chargers' kicking game, allowed the most returns in the NFL during the regular season. Rose kicked in 2 games for the Chargers at the end of the 2017 season. Pro Bowl outside linebacker Thomas Davis says he plans to play at least one more season. It will not be with the Carolina Panthers. He announced yesterday that the Panthers told him they're going in a different direction, and the Sabres off tonight, back in action tomorrow night in Carolina against the Hurricanes. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio, spent a lot of time over the last couple of days talking about coaching vacancies, coaching hires. We're going to talk to a guy who's done a little bit of work on this, actually a lot of work, and a lot of meaningful, thoughtful writing on this topic. Dominique Foxworth, former NFL cornerback, has written about coaching hires for TheUndefeated.com. Dominique Foxworth, a former Pro Bowl cornerback, a Harvard MBA in his resume, and he joins us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Dominique, John Murphy, and Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. We appreciate coming on with us today. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. It's been a long time since I've been on with you guys.
Yeah. You know what it was? It was 2 years ago, and you wrote a really good piece. We were thinking about it. I was thinking about it yesterday because when the Bills were in the process of interviewing coaches, they eventually hired Sean McDermott. You wrote a great piece about how to hire a great NFL coach for your team. And basically it said, look for a CEO, not necessarily one of these coordinators, right? Can you talk about that and what you had in mind back then when you wrote that?
Sure. No, I just think that the idea, and it was somewhat a novel thought back then, but the idea is that the logic behind the way we hire coaches is a little flawed in that we try to find the coordinator who was the best. But the skills that are required to be a good coordinator are not the skills that are required to be a good head coach. So, I mean, a lot of this information or this opinion of mine comes from playing for John Harbaugh, who was the best head coach I played for. And would he was a special teams coach. He wasn't an offensive or defensive coordinator. And his special teams were good, but he wasn't even highly touted for that. But that's fine. You hire a special teams coordinator to do your special teams. You hire an offensive coordinator to do offense, defensive coordinator to do the defense. The head coach is the only person who can impact and cultivate a culture. And I think that is all the soft skills that we don't really think are that important, but building relationships and building bridges between the coaches and the players and building bridges between the players and each other and the team and the fans, like those things are the things that I think drive teams to work harder than other teams and prepare better than other teams and win games. And that's how you have sustained success in this league with a coach like that.
We've been talking about these coaching changes, and there's 8 openings, or there were 8 openings at the end of the season, and most of those changes, the reasons for them were self-evident. The one that kind of got to me was the one with Steve Wilks in Arizona. Sure. They gave him like 1 season. They had a general manager who was shaky at best, had already used some bad judgment. I mean, he had DUI problems and 2 of them, and he was suspended for 6 games. You know, so he had all kinds of problems. They gave him 1 season with what now at the end of the season you can look back and say was probably the worst roster in football with a rookie quarterback. And he loses his – Steve Wilks gets fired. Now, okay, he didn't win games, but – there had to be, I mean, almost like, well, what are they not saying? I mean, was there something else going on there? And I guess maybe they'll tell you, you know, nobody wants to, you know, drag a guy through the mud after he's gone. But by the same token, on the surface, that looks untenable. What's going on in Arizona?
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm with you. So I think these last few weeks for them have been quite embarrassing and poorly managed, because we're in the wake of what many have been calling the Blackest Monday, where our league went from having, at least this season, the beginning of the season, 8 minority coaches to having 2. And whether you think that's a problem or not, it is a narrative that is out there. And then with that stuff looming around, they fired their coach. Was the only one that you could really make a case for was wrong. All the other coaches, like, you could understand why they were fired, which doesn't necessarily say that minority coaches in the league is not a problem, but you could understand why those all were fired. But there is no real explanation for why Steve Wilks was fired. You could argue that there wasn't a great explanation to hire him in the first place. He was a coordinator for 1 year, a defense coordinator for 1 year, and it wasn't even like it was a world-beating defense, but then they hired him, but that's fine. And they ran him out there, and I'm with you. I'm not in the building, so I'm going to try to give them the benefit of the doubt, just assume that whatever was happening there was just so untenable that you can't bring them back, but only went in 3 games with a bad roster. Like, do they think he underachieved and the roster was good? Because they kept Steve Keim, the guy you mentioned before, who had was arrested on suspicion of DUI. Just none of it adds up. And then they go from that to hiring, which I wrote about it for the Undefeated today. I don't understand. There is no logical explanation for why you hire Cliff Kingsbury. All the justifications, they crumble under the pressure of 2 or 3 follow-up questions. Like, he's not an offensive guru. He's not a quarterback whisperer. Like, that's just not in his track record. The reputation is there, but he hasn't really done anything to prove that, I would say. He was close to Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes was awesome while he was in college, but guess what? Patrick Mahomes is even better in NFL, so maybe he was just good. And it's not as though he kind of whipped Johnny Manziel into shape. Johnny Manziel was playing kind of parking lot football, and he went to the NFL and did the same thing. The only point you could point to is maybe Case Keenum down in Houston, where Case Keenum was a decent NFL quarterback, but in Houston, he was a world beater in Conference USA. So it really just doesn't make any sense. And he's a head coach, so he's going to have to hire a defensive staff, and there's no indication that he knows anybody that knows anything about defense, because he's never been on a team with any defense. Right. So I could go on and on. I'm sorry to kind of...
No, not at all. Dominique.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
Is there a way to get in there to think maybe the interview process... And I know it. You have to do it. You got to get these guys in and look at them. But maybe the interview process itself is flawed. These guys come in and they can knock it dead and hit a home run in an interview. But once they get out of that room, the answers to all of their questions kind of fall apart. I mean, they don't have the answers to the questions that a head coach gets asked. But a candidate, they have all the answers. I mean, maybe that system is flawed.
I think you're right, but I don't think they know what they're looking for. And, like, I have a theory on what it takes to be a head coach in the NFL. It doesn't mean my theory is right. And lots of other people have theories. But there is no kind of definitive factor. And I think the same is true for scouting players. We've gotten a lot better at scouting players. But the problem, I think, is with scouting players, you have metrics that you can point to and say, well, this 40 time matters. We can say definitively that this 40 time will matter on the field. It may not mean this person is going to be a Hall of Famer, but it will matter. There's no metrics like that for them to point to. There's nothing they can get a gauge on, because no one has done this job before. It goes back to the point of it's a different job. Like, coaching is coaching all the way up until you become an NFL head coach. Then it no longer becomes coaching. And it's about delegation and management and public relations. Like, these are the jobs of coaching. And nobody, frankly, no one has been prepared for it. I don't think anybody knows how to interview or test for it. And sometimes you get lucky and find a guy who does it well, or find a team, frankly. That's another thing, is the NFL staff is more important, I think, than in many cases than the head coach. And find a guy, just get lucky and find a team that can do it and do it well, and then everyone looks at you like you figured it out. But I'm not sure that people are even hiring for the right reasons. So Cliff Kingsbury could turn out to be a great head coach. From everything I've heard, he's got pretty good people skills. But they hired him because there was another young, handsome offensive mind who has success in their division, and they're like, let's do that.
Right. Exactly.
Dominic Foxworth with us, longtime NFL corner, writer for The Undefeated, and host of the Morning Roast podcast on ESPN. Hey, Dominic, you mentioned about Harbaugh and John Harbaugh, and you thought he was the best coach you had. What did you see in Harbaugh that led you to that conclusion? What traits did you see in him as a head coach that made you think he's the best? He's the best one I've had.
So, I don't think I noticed it at the time. I didn't know what he was doing at the time, but these things stand out to me. When I first signed there, my first meeting, I had my phone in my hand, and I just put it down before we started talking, and the screensaver thing was still up, and it was a globe. And so he used that as a conversation starter and said, so you're worldly, and you think about these things, and you try to have a real big conversation about existential issues with me. And then I was like, no, well, it was a default that came with the phone. So he missed on that, but he was trying to make connections. Then I tore my ACL. I was in the training room. And I was reading a book. He came in and had a 45-minute conversation with me in the middle of a game week, a game I wasn't playing in because I was out for the season, had a 45-minute conversation with me about the book that I was reading because he had happened to have read it when he was in school. So I think that matters, and I think that building those bridges is something that matters to building a culture on a team. And so often I think coaches believe that they – and front offices also believe, like, all right, we're going to hire somebody from the Belichick tree because they will come and install that Patriots way culture here. You can't just install a culture. Like, it has to be cultivated. And it's something that you have to – there is a culture at an organization when you get there. So in order to change that culture, it requires a slow process. It's not just walk in and change. And you saw – I think you see that kind of backlash happening in Detroit right now with Matt Patricia.
Hey, Dominic, we had a conversation on our show a couple of months ago in the middle of the Bills season about that topic, culture. Sean McDermott, what did he say, Steve? He said culture trumps strategy or something, right?
Yeah, back in the offseason he had said that,
Do you believe that? Culture is more important than X's and O's?
Absolutely. I think the X's and O's. So I think that there are ways to compete in this league, and there are ways that you can no longer compete. So there was a time when I think that you could compete based on being fit, like whoever worked out the hardest. But we're past that point. Everyone is in the same condition. Like, you can't outwork your opponent at this point. We're all running and lifting the same amount. And I think the same is true for scheme. Like, I don't think you can out-scheme opponents. Like, that's not sustainable. Everyone has good coaches, smart coaches. You might get it this week, but the next team is going to figure that out. And I don't think that you're going to – I mean, the league legislates talent in a way that it's hard to – with the salary cap and with the draft order, it's hard to just have more talent than anybody else. But I do think that your preparation matters. And your preparation, I think, is completely tied in with the culture of the organization, which in my mind, like, culture is one of those words that means so many things to a bunch of people. But in my mind, it's like the expected or the accepted, like, activities and practices and processes. Yeah. That is what the culture is. It's the things that people are expected to do and that they expect from each other and hold each other accountable for. And I think that that matters. That helps the team be more prepared. That is how you come up with more innovative strategies, because you have a culture that is conducive for that. And I think the Patriots culture is, frankly, I think it is based on flexibility. And you see why how they draft and who they pay and what their roster looks like. They want flexible guys that can change strategy and can run the ball, catch the ball, play rush, play pass coverage. Like, that is what it seems like they're optimizing for. Mm-hmm. And not all teams can do that, but I do think you need to develop a culture that fits in directly with the resources that you have and the players that you have. And I think it's soft and it's not fun. It's a lot more fun to say, hey, we got this new zone read thing. No one's going to be able to stop that. But people figure it out.
Right. Yeah. Dominic, I want to ask you a little bit about the games coming up this weekend. Dak Prescott and the Cowboys headed into L.A. Rams. And for me, and you don't have to speak to this, I think the NFC games are a little bit look to be a little bit lopsided, more so than the AFC games. But do you think Dak Prescott and the Cowboys are maybe a Super Bowl caliber team?
I think so. I think they could. I certainly think they could win this week. I'm certainly not a Super Bowl favorite, but I think that with Dak's very short playoff history, has been incredibly impressive. Like, if you think back to their divisional game his rookie year, he went toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers, and they were down by 15 headed into the fourth quarter, and Dak scored a touchdown on the first drive, scored a touchdown on the second drive, got a two-point conversion. Then Aaron Rodgers went back and led them to a field goal. Dak answered and took him down and led him to a field goal, and then Aaron Rodgers had that crazy, ridiculous throw. Like that was his. That was him as a rookie. He made. He had three fourth quarter drives, needed to score in all of them, and he did. And we saw similar things against Russell Wilson and the Seahawks last week. Like he played well, and all the criticism that Lenahan is getting and Jason Garrett, I've been one that's been defending them, and it seemed like it came to fruition this weekend or last weekend because they had plays. Remember that Amari throwback? Like they had well-designed plays that they pulled out in the second half at opportune moments, and it worked out. So I don't know. I think it'll be a close game. I don't think that home field advantage matters in Los Angeles. It'll be half Dallas fans there, which will be helpful because if you notice, Dak is one of the most active guys under center pre-snap. Like he seems to be making changes every single play before every snap, and being on the road makes that more difficult, but not if you're in a stadium that's half full of LA fans, or excuse me, of Dallas fans. So
yeah.
I like Dallas this weekend in that running game.
Hey, Dominic, while I was watching playoff football last week, I came across the television ad with Vontae Davis explaining about, you know, his motivation for leaving the Bills at halftime of the home opener, and now it was a commercial for fantasy football. You talked to Vontae Davis shortly after his departure from Buffalo. What did you take from that? And I reread your post today on the Undefeated. You didn't defend him, but you certainly felt like he had an argument to make for his decision to leave at halftime of the Bills home opener. What did you take from that?
I feel like it would be a waste of energy to bash him at that point. Like the reasons why you could be disappointed in him or upset at him were obvious. I thought what was more interesting was talking to him and figuring out like how could we be empathetic? How could we understand that? And I had never done anything like that, and I can't say that I wouldn't do anything like that because I've never felt what he felt, and I don't know what it feels like to walk into a locker room and. Well, let me correct it. I know what it feels like to not want to play football. I retired. I didn't want to play anymore. And I was on the sidelines watching games and thinking, watching the game, like, there's no way. Like, what type of maniacs do this? There's no way that I could go out there and do that. And so the best thing I could do to empathize with Vontae was imagine if I was in the locker room when that moment hit. If I had a helmet in my hand and shoulder pads on when that moment hit. Like, I don't know what I would do. I might have done a similar thing. Might have faked an injury. I really gave it some thought. Like, what would I do? Well, I might have just gone out there and gone through the motion. But if your heart's not in it, that's something that our coaches tell us all the time, or used to tell us all the time, and maybe it was just lip service, but they'll say, we don't want anybody here who doesn't want to be here. When you start getting slow in practice, I'm sure that Steve and other players could attest to hearing something like that from coaches at some point where it's like, if you don't want to be here, then we don't want you here. So he didn't want to be there, so he left. It seems like he made the right decision for everyone. I know that it's difficult for people to wrap their minds around. But
well, it was the timing,
I'm not
though.
I'm on that team, but I'm less bothered by
Dominic,
it.
What about the timing of it? Halftime. Make that decision on Monday after the game.
There is no defense of the timing. Like we live in, I feel like, such binary times where you have to either say something was 100% right or something's 100% wrong, or I 100% agree with this person. Like, there's no defense for the timing. Like, that was awful, and it was bad for his teammates and bad for the players. But at the same time, I can say that I understand where he's coming from. Like, I can both understand him and defend him and say that what he did was wrong.
Dominic, I know this too, and listen, it was his call to make. I get it. He had every right to do what he did. But do you think he understood the gravity of the future ramifications of what he was doing at the time he made that decision?
No. I mean, it was a hugely emotional decision. Yeah. I think that decision was driven by emotion. I don't think that he rationally thought himself through what to do. And, I mean, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure that I understand the long-term. You might need to explain that to me because I don't understand what the long-term ramification. The only ramification that came to mind for me was it's tougher on his teammates or on his coaches because there's one fewer player out there. But that happens from time to time when someone gets injured. So it didn't seem like it was that the ramifications were that impactful.
Yeah, the only ramification that I'm referring to is the fact that no matter what he has done in his career, there's only one thing that's going on his bio for the rest of his life. I mean, his whole career gets washed away in regard to the last thing that he did as a player. And that's I don't know that he thought about that. I don't even know if anybody could have really anticipated it. It seems obvious now, but there's no question that for the rest of his life, this is his career.
Yeah.
He got an endorsement deal from it, too.
I guess in some ways that's, like, poetic and appropriate, because it seems like we all were concerned about how it was going to impact your team, make some players, but really the person who was most negatively impacted for long term is him. So
yeah.
It almost seems fair.
It was interesting, your conversation with him. All of your stuff is interesting, Dominic. I hope we can get you on the show again a little bit more often down the road and talk about some of these issues. Thanks for being with us here today.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Dominic Foxworth writes for TheUndefeated.com. He is also a host of the Morning Roast podcast on ESPN. Does a lot of work with ESPN these days. Played 7 years in the NFL as a cornerback. Dominic Foxworth joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, presented by Subway Restaurants. Proud to be locally owned and operated. He lays out the way to hire a head coach better than anybody I've heard in the last couple of years. Yeah. And again, the post that he wrote 2 years ago for The Undefeated was right around the time the Bills were interviewing Sean McDermott. You know, we spent a lot of time yesterday, Steve, talking about young offensive coordinators. That's kind of the coin of the realm. It appeared yesterday anyway. Foxworth writes, some coordinators who are hired, sometimes they go the other way completely. Instead of being the CEO, they abandon their past as a coordinator and focus on their responsibilities as a head coach. In this scenario, the organization is paying the coach more to do what he is good at less often. He makes a good point. You know, you're hiring these coordinators, and a couple of teams have done it this offseason, who are good coordinators but have no experience as a head coach, no experience as the CEO, no experience creating a culture. And so then if they turn to that, they've abandoned what they were good at, calling plays, designing offenses. It just seems like a backwards way to do it for me.
Yep.
I think he's totally right.
And let's face it, too. Things have changed, and they're ever-changing. The league, what it takes to be a head coach in the National Football League now is way different than it was when Marv Levy took mm-hmm. over for the Buffalo Bills and when all those old Don Shula took over in the Dolphins in the 1960s. And the league has evolved so fast, and it really is. You're running what is now a multi-billion dollar industry in-house. I mean, that it's big responsibility, and there's a lot of irons in the fire. You've got analytics. You've got people who are college scouting, pro scouting. You've got self-scouting. You've got counterintelligence, where you're finding out everything you can about your upcoming opponents on and off the field. You're trying to do in-game adjustments on the fly, which is as hot a topic in the NFL right now as anything else. And your ability to do that is being tested every week. And you have to come up with the techniques and the protocols for your organization to do all of that. It's an enormously executive-level job. And when you talk about it the way I just did, it almost forgets that there's X's and O's and strategies and involved. And more so than any other industry that has all that same stuff going on, it's emotion. It's emotional content of your guys on the field bringing a level of commitment and aggression on any given play. I mean, you talk about covering all the bases of human emotion and activity and intellect and strategy. An NFL head coach has to do all of that. And I don't know that just because you can call plays off a play sheet qualifies you.
I agree.
You got to look for so much more stuff.
Yeah.
So,
hey, we can talk more about this, what constitutes a good coaching hire. They're being hired left and right in the NFL. Got phones open for that. Our Twitter poll today deals with the Bills in 2018. What was their biggest accomplishment in 2018? The Buffalo Bills. Got a couple of suggestions for you up on the Twitter poll. The Bills' biggest accomplishment in 2018, drafting and developing the potential future quarterback. 64% of you say, yes, that's it. 26% of you say they bit the bullet on the salary cap. That's the biggest accomplishment. 7% of you say, you know what, they didn't accomplish much with only 6 wins. 3%, only 3% say the improvement in the defense was their biggest accomplishment. What do you think? Give us a call. Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll free, 1-888-550-2550, or send in a tweet. We might read it on the tweet sheet. Come on back, a lot more to talk about, whatever's on your mind. 803-0550 and toll free, 1-888-550-2550. It is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. We're presented by Kaleida Health, coming to you from our One Buffalo studio in Orchard Park. Chilly day. I just took a look outside, Steve. Not much snow. Not 2 feet of snow, that's for sure. Not even
it's
close.
Cold.
It's cold and a little snowy. Thanks for tuning in today on this Thursday afternoon. Playoffs coming up. Interesting tactic. We're going to get back to our Twitter poll in a second here. And you take your phone calls on that. What was the Bills' biggest accomplishment in 2018? Many teams still out there trying to finish this season strong, including the New Orleans Saints, Steve. And I've lost the article, but it was a pretty good one about – oh, here it is. Sean Payton. Did you see what Sean Payton did Monday this week
yes.
in the New Orleans Saints
that
locker room?
Awesome.
He, as the players returned for work this Monday, getting ready to host Philadelphia in the Sunday NFC Divisional Playoff game, Sean Payton brought three armed guards, a stack of more than $200,000 in cash.
$225,000.
The Vince Lombardi trophy and a Super Bowl ring into the team meeting room to get the attention of the players. $200,000.
He had it stacked right. They had $250,000 stacked right here. The Vince Lombardi trophy and a Super Bowl ring that the Saints have already won back in years past. So he had all three of those things sitting there, along with like three or four armed guards in the room, right?
Yeah.
And he said, "You want this?" I said, "Win three games." The place erupted. I mean, the guys were going crazy because that's. You know, that stuff works, man.
Does it? You ever had any coach do that before?
Not like that.
What have they done?
I don't know. Let me, you know. No, we never had anything like that.
Payton did it before the 2009 Saints Super Bowl run. Only three of his current players were around for that. Mark Ingram said, you know, guys make good money here, but you don't often see $250,000 cash and the Lombardi trophy sitting right there in front of it and the ring sitting right next to it. Sheldon Rankin's defensive tackle, his quote, if you saw all that money in front of you, anybody would get excited about that, and I'm right along with them. Motivational tactic. I bet that works. Here's the money. Here's the trophy. Here's the ring. You want it?
Listen, yeah, and you can say that. I mean, listen. Everybody has their own motivation for playing football and for why they want to win and their competitive spirit and all that. But, you know, we do live in a world where there are tangible rewards for what you're doing on a football field. In the United States, I mean, these guys are rich. They're paid handsomely for their skills as an athlete. But to see tangibly what they'll get if they go out there, if you tangibly see a carrot on the end of that stick and what it looks like, It's pretty stark. I mean, it's a really Sean Payton is a really sharp coach, and you know he's taken criticism and deservedly so over the years. He was for the Bounty Gate thing a few years ago. He survived it. Was suspended for an entire year.
Yeah,
and the organization hung in there with him. And you know to see that him weather that and come back, he is one of those coaches. And I said it yesterday. He is what Sean McVay. He's what Cliff Kingsbury, what Matt LaFleur, what all these young hotshot coordinators want to be. He's the guy. He's been in New Orleans for a long time. He owns the city. I mean, the guy's a citywide treasure. He's won a Super Bowl, has been with the same quarterback for all those years. He is what all these young players want to be, these young head coaches, these young, handsome offensive coordinators, head coaches. He's what they want to be. And to have him, you know, say, hey, guys, here's what you're playing for. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. He's, not my favorite, but certainly he is well-respected. And I'll tell you what, they're going to the Super Bowl, Steve. I think they're going to succeed.
Listen,
and not just because of the stunt with the trophies and the cash, but I think they've got the talent. And, they got to believe, like, they were kind of short-circuited last year, losing the way they did in the playoffs last year, right, and that tremendous finish to that game in Minnesota. I believe that they're going. I think they're going to the Super Bowl this year. I think they're the NFC representative.
He is a guy who is one of those hot coordinators who turned out to be the right guy, not just a guy who can call plays. He handles that entire organization. He weathered an enormous storm of their own making, no question, and has continued to coach really well. You know, he's one of those guys, when he gets on the sidelines of head coach, he doesn't waste timeouts. He doesn't mismanage the clock at the end of the games. He doesn't go conservative in a game that he's got to win. He doesn't do any of that stuff that all these other guys are criticized for. He seems to be razor sharp every time he steps on the sidelines, and his team's one of the favorites to go to the Super Bowl as a result. Again.
Bills in 2018, what did they accomplish? Give us a call. Let's discuss. Or from the tweet sheet, a couple of tweets. The Bills' biggest accomplishments in 2018. Amy tweets in. It's obviously Josh, she says. But add that to the fact that they also got out of salary cap hell and got Tremaine Edmonds, a good 2018. All right, I like that. Robert Lewis tweet, I think the biggest accomplishment was McDermott continuing to build his culture and the team buying in. Boy, that's an important point, especially in light of our conversation a minute ago with Dominique Foxworth. There are those, Steve, and we've heard them, and I listen to them, but there are those who say culture doesn't matter, wins matter, talent matters. McDermott, we got a whole show out of it back in the fall. Well, he said culture trumps strategy, right?
Yeah.
Robert Lewis tweeting in said the biggest accomplishment was that McDermott continued to build his culture. I would listen to that argument. I wouldn't dismiss that offhand. I don't know if it's the biggest accomplishment, but he certainly the culture that they started to build in 2017 took firm root here in 2018, and I think that bodes well for the future.
I think there's a certain level of given in the NFL. When you reach the NFL, the X's and O's to a certain extent are a given. You're going to be sound in your defense. Now, certainly you can scheme and give your guys best chance to win, get matchups. But even deep into that, down that road, or a lot of it is a given at the NFL level. You've got a ton of coaches who are strategists who put together their game plans with X's and O's, and your players understand the schemes at the X's and O's to a higher degree than any other level of football. So there is a level of it that it goes beyond running and stopping the run. You got to have pass rush and you got to get turnovers kind of thing. And when you get to a culture, a lot of what you know, certainly you're going to have a sound game plan in place to go into a game. But when you've got a team that it has a culture of expectation, and that culture is one that the expectation within your locker room has your players, the old players, young players alike, studying hard to prepare themselves mentally for the game on Sunday and holding each other accountable and making sure they're each other are sharp and know what they're doing. That culture trumps the game plan because it means that your players are going to be more prepared. They're going to be better able to adjust. They're going to be more ready to make decisions on the fly that are in concert with one another during a game. That, to me, is culture, not X's and O's, and I think it does trump strategy.
Let's go to a call here. Hank in West Seneca. Hello, Hank. You're on the air with us.
Listen, years ago I was working on it, the original stadium, Rich Stadium, and at one time they talked about covering it with a dome, and they talked about they'd have to put the columns like 30 to 50 feet away from the existing building so they wouldn't interfere with any other thing. And I'm just wondering what it would cost today as opposed to building a whole new stadium in the city.
No idea.
No idea. Hank, I don't know. Ask me in 10 years what they're going to do, because that's what you're going to be talking about. It's going to be
I don't know what it would cost.
It's going to be a decade before any of this is decided. And the only
I don't know if it'll be that long.
Yeah, listen, the only poll that's going to matter in the end is the one that goes around a conference table.
Yeah.
There's going to be about probably 8 or 10 people in the room, and they're all going to be people other than Murph and I.
So we won't even know when the poll is taking place.
That poll is going to trump the poll that we've all taken over the last week or two. So,
you take the poll? I haven't seen the poll.
You got to take it. It's pretty fun.
Why?
So,
why do I have to take it? I don't know if it matters. Does it matter?
It doesn't. Not for the time being. Listen, you and I both think that this stadium issue, this question, this is a dot on the horizon. I'll be surprised if in a decade any of us are sitting in a new stadium in Buffalo. Now 9 years, okay, maybe nine. It's a half a dozen years away.
Yeah.
At least before they even break ground.
Right. My guess is they will try to renovate what they have here, but I don't know that. Nobody knows that.
They've done it like five times.
Yeah. Do it again.
Yeah.
You got a stadium built in the ground, and that part of it I think is pretty solid, and do what you have to do up top. But, again, our opinions don't matter.
It's amazing because at least we on the radio, somebody can call in and ask us our opinions.
Yeah.
Because that person who calls is the only one who cares.
Right. We got a break here. We're going to come back.
I'm pretty sure nobody cares in my own house what my opinion is about.
Oh, yeah. I can attest to that.
Not about the stadium.
Yeah. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, a couple of minutes away, Moose Johnston, Daryl Moose Johnston. We'll talk with him about the Cowboys as they get set to head to Los Angeles to play the Rams, 8:15 on Saturday. You going to watch all four playoff games this week, Steve?
Yep.
Are you really?
I'm going to be.
You did not last week, right? No, nobody did.
I'm going to be reclined. And
how will you feel about that at 7:45 p.m. on Sunday?
I'll feel like I've wasted the day.
2 days.
I'll feel like a total.
Right?
Yeah,
slack. So what can we do? That's what we really need. We need advice for people who want to keep up on these games but don't want to just plant themselves on the couch for 7 hours Saturday,
The Saturday thing, the 4:35 Chiefs game, then the 8:15 Cowboys-Rams game, that's perfect because you can like do whatever you want all the way up until 4 o'clock. And let's face it, here at 6 or 5:45, it'll be dark.
Yeah.
I'll be ready to shut it down.
On Saturday.
Right. Sunday, however, I mean.
Now, what do I do if I have hockey tickets on Saturday? Which I do.
You got to go to the hockey
game.
To the hockey game. The Cowboys-Rams game. We had Dominic Foxworth on, and he thinks the Cowboys could go into L.A. and win. I think he's drunk.
Delusional?
Yeah, I don't think he's – there's no way. I got a lot of respect for Dominic, but he thinks the Cowboys and Dak Prescott are clutch. And listen, the Rams are tough, and it will be a Cowboys-friendly stadium out there in L.A., but man, oh, man.
Got to be a strategy. I got to figure this out. I got basketball tickets on Sunday, 2 o'clock.
Hockey tickets on Saturdays, yeah, basketball tickets on Sunday.
And four games to watch. There's just not enough of me to go around, really.
Yeah, that's good.
I got to be a spectator for like 30 hours this week.
You got things you got to watch.
Yeah, right. I don't know how to do it. I got to figure it out. I guess people say tape the game, watch it later. Well, then now you've devoted more time to just sitting on your butt watching sports.
Do you have the game pass and all that?
Yeah.
Okay. See, so that helps.
So I can watch like the condensed version.
Yeah, you can go down and watch the condensed version.
45 minutes.
Listen, for those people who don't know what that is, you need to find out what that is because that's a lifesaver for people like Murph and I.
Yeah.
You can watch an NFL game in like 35, 40 minutes.
Now, what I typically do is prioritize. So which game am I least interested in this weekend? It's Thursday. It should be the game that I think I would be most inclined to miss.
That's the 8 o'clock on Saturday?
8:15 p.m. on Saturday. Second
well, that's
most
good, though. So you can go to the hockey game and
right.
you catch up on
keep
that
up
one.
On it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Second, I'm ranking them now. I don't know. I like all three of the others. I want to see the Colts and the Chiefs. I certainly want to see the Chargers in New England. And Philadelphia and New Orleans shouldn't be a problem Sunday night. I got
to
figure this out.
Plan to see Sunday afternoon. Well, you got basketball tickets. What time Sunday?
2:00.
Oh, see, that's a crusher.
I know. I might not make it to that one.
That's a crusher.
I know. Plus, Sunday night, Michigan's on TV. At 7 o'clock at the end of the Philadelphia
Yeah, you'll
Orleans
be able to catch the last two-thirds of that.
Right. Yeah, I need a little help with this weekend schedule.
You know, it's tough to be you, Murph.
Michigan's on tonight. You sound like you're interested in watching Michigan basketball tonight.
No,
You printed out a schedule.
That was only because I got to have a conversation with you, and I can't do
All
it
I
without,
said was, hey, Michigan's on TV tonight, 8
get
o'clock.
If you want to get Murph to listen to you, sprinkle in two-word Michigan basketball. It doesn't matter what you're talking about.
And then we'll get to the point that they're 15-0 and ranked second in the country.
And will snap around and start talking. He'll start listening
Wolverines?
To you. If Michigan basketball, what?
They're
15-0. Even your lovely bride would tell you that. She'll need you to get something from the store. She'll start with Michigan basketball, and by the time it's over, you're going to be bringing home a loaf of bread and a dozen eggs.
I said to her last night.
At least she'll listen.
Last night, nothing going on, nothing really on TV. I said, hey, Michigan basketball tomorrow night. And to her credit, this is why we're married 32 years. She goes, oh, really? Good. Perfect answer. Now, will she watch? She'll watch a little and wander around. But that was the right answer.
The crucial thing is that gives you the green light to just park it. And just,
Yeah. Right? Michigan. Yeah.
She's, she understands.
Michigan,
perfect.
Illinois tonight. So you're not watching?
You're in a good place, Murph.
You mentioned you watched Kansas last night, so that's enough.
I couldn't watch. I'm not there yet. I'm still neck deep in the football thing, and I just can't do it.
Okay.
I'm not hockey. I'm in the football thing now. It's when I lose football and still have the hockey, then maybe I'll get into the basketball.
Okay.
All right,
we'll sort it out.
But you're in a good place with Michigan.
They're 15-0. All right. We're going to break. We got Daryl Moose Johnston coming up when we return. Come on back. One Bills Live presented by Collada Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.